The Rogue River Basin is home to some of the largest salmon spawning populations in Oregon. But hundreds of man-made barriers throughout the watersheds in southern Oregon create unnecessary challenges for salmon to access the habitat they need to thrive. The Rogue River Watershed Council is addressing this problem. Joining the exchange to help us learn more are my two guests. John Spies is project manager with the Rogue River Watershed Council. Welcome, John.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having us.
And Beth Boos is a community engagement manager with the Rogue River Watershed Council. Welcome, Beth.
Thank you so much. We're glad to be here.
So, Beth, let's start with you. Tell me about your role and the work you do there.
So, as a community engagement project manager, most of what I do is kind of our public interface to what we're doing behind the scenes and what we're doing up in the rivers and streams. We want that information out into the public and out into our communities so that they know how they can be better stewards and continue what we're doing for the future.
Okay. And John, tell me about your work in the council.
Yeah. So I'm one of kind of three on the ground project managers. We all work to work collaboratively with partner organizations to develop and implement ecological restoration projects, fish passage improvement projects, monitoring projects, et cetera. So that's what we focus on.
Okay, and what's the territory, what's the boundaries, the constraints of your region?
Yeah, so the Rogue River Watershed Council, watershed councils in general are all over the state, and we have we operate in what are called service areas. And our service area is really from the wild and scenic section of the Rogue River all the way up to the headwaters in the upper and kind of middle Rogue Basin.
Okay. Geographically, where are we talking in the state?
Yeah, so we're in southwestern Oregon, obviously, in the upper Rogue Basin and the middle Rogue. We focus in our work in five strategic focal watersheds, the sub-watersheds of the Rogue River: Evans Creek Watershed, Trail Creek Watershed, Elk Creek Watershed, Little Butte Creek, and Big Butte Creek Watersheds is where we really focus the majority of our work on the ground. So again, from basically just downstream of Grants Pass all the way up past Shady Cove to, you know, nearly to Crater Lake.
Gotcha. So help me get a sense of the problem. Why is salmon spawning such an important issue?
Well, you know, just like any species, we all want preferable conditions to complete our kind of life cycle, right? Just like us, we like to be comfortable, have the necessary resources to survive and thrive. And salmon are no different than that. And so, again, as you said, the Rogue River Basin is just one of the largest salmon steelhead producers in Oregon, outside the Columbia River. But there's several historic land use conditions that kind of impede that ability for those species to survive and thrive. And that's where we and other organizations like ours come in, is trying to address those historic conditions, what are called limiting factors, maybe depleted habitat conditions, limited access to suitable areas for spawning, maybe degraded water quality. And so all these limiting factors is what we seek to address when we're developing and implementing these projects.
Okay, so can one of you walk me through the life cycle of a salmon? I mean, where they're born, where do they go, how do they get back? Give me a sense of what's happening here.
Yeah, so it's really kind of a really amazing life history strategy when we think about it. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar. Salmon are iconic in the Northwest for a variety of reasons. But they spawn, they reproduce in these tributary streams. So in our area, it's those focal watersheds that I just talked about, the Elk Creek, Trail Creek, et cetera. They spawn and reproduce in those systems. Juvenile salmonids remain up there for a couple years before they migrate out to the ocean. So they're anadromous, meaning they go out to the ocean, they spend some time out there, they grow, they become stronger, and then really kind of an amazing life cycle strategy is they go back to their natal streams. So they go back to where they were born. And that can be a long way, right? So if you're thinking in the Rogue River watershed, they spend a few years out in the ocean growing, then they migrate back upstream a lot of miles, a couple hundred miles up into those tributary streams to then spawn again and reproduce, and the life cycle continues.
Okay, and so along that way, there are these barriers, man-made barriers. Tell me about these.
Yeah, so there's you know, again, these like legacy land uses. So let's talk about road stream crossing. So that can be one of the projects we're focusing on. Road stream crossings, where a road crosses a stream, obviously, can be a culvert, a dam, et cetera. And in the Rogue Basin, those began to be built in the 1800s. Several hundred of those were built, and they were maintained for a long period of time, but they impede the structures or impede the ability of fish to migrate. So there's hundreds, if not thousands, of these just in the Rogue Basin that impede access for fish to get back up to those spawning nail grounds in these key tributaries. And so that's part of this, part of the work that we do in our partner organizations, is to address those fish passage barriers. There's several other, like, let's call them environmental conditions or that can impede this. So we got degraded water quality, again, limited habitat complexity, development onto the floodplain, and again, these physical barriers in the form of dam and culverts, and all these things collectively do not help salmon to achieve that life cycle strategy of going back to their native spawning grounds.
My guests are John Spies and Beth Boos from the Rogue River Watershed Council. We're talking about solutions to the challenges faced by spawning salmon in southern Oregon. So you mentioned road stream crossings and culverts. We all know what dams are, but explain to me what you mean by road stream crossings, and what are culverts, and why do they exist?
Sure. Yeah, no. So it's just that. It's where a road crosses a stream. And it can be as small as a little gravel road in the forest. Sometimes there's things called low water crossings where you basically drive through the creek. Maybe that's on private property, all the way up to big dams that are holding back waters and reservoirs. And then there's also culverts and bridges, right? All these things are road stream crossings. So we got to get our vehicles across it. We got to walk across it, et cetera.
And what is a culvert?
So a culvert is something that's embedded in the stream bed, and there's usually a road going over the top, and that culvert allows the creek to pass water to pass through that and come out the other side.
Seems it like usually looks like a giant pipe.
There we go.
Thanks, Beth. Yeah, but so they are culverts. You know, put in place again all the way back into the 1800s. Many are an issue. So they're undersized. So they're not allowing all the water and debris and material that comes down to pass through. It can become damaged. When there's a high flow event, a lot of water coming down, fish are not able to get up and swim through that. It's like a water velocity barrier. So it's like a fire hose shooting out the other side, and that becomes a velocity barrier. Or culverts, for example, in these high flows, the outstream of the culvert where the water's pouring out creates this deep pocket below it, and at summer low flows, when water goes down, there's no way for fish to get up and through that culvert.
Okay, so let's talk solutions.
Yeah.
What are the projects that you all are working on?
Yeah, so the Watershed Council is very strategic in where we work. Again, in those five focal watersheds, and the reason why those have been selected is because of the potential for this ecological uplift, improving conditions, et cetera. So very targeted and strategic. This summer, we're working on, for the fish passage barrier improvement projects, is on Chicago Creek and West Fork Trail Creek. Up outside a trail, two culverts being replaced, and we're going to put in bridges over the streams. And this area is way up the West Fork Trail Creek watershed, so a sub-watershed on Trail Creek. And then, you know, although small, the West Fork Trail Creek watershed is highly productive when we think about salmonids and coho, salmon, et cetera, because the upper stream reaches, especially around the Chicago Creek, provide all over summering habitat for cold water fishes. So fish want to have cold water in the summer, and that's increasingly important. And the Trail Creek and Chicago Creek project provide access to that cold water habitat during the hot summer months.
Okay, so Beth, what's your role here? Tell me about some of the time, the personnel, the costs involved in these projects.
Yeah, so John is managing our West Fork Trail and Chicago Creek project, which is a pretty big project up there. And we have contractors selected, and they'll go out and they'll start working. One of the big things with this project is we had to order basically new bridges, which John can get into more specifics about, but we have to essentially fully replace and make sure that the new structures that are going in are going to allow salmon, especially juvenile salmon, to move up and down through that section of creek, because we can't get rid of a road. They still need the road there, so we just have to make the condition as best as we can for the salmon to move around. So that's kind of the big portion of this project for us. John, do you want to touch on the grants and financials of it for us?
Sure, yeah. Similar to many of our projects, we have a couple different sources of funding, both state and federal funds, grants that we secured, and that's paying for this project. And most of our projects, we have a combination of state and federal funding.
What's the cost on those?
So the culvert project is going to be, the fish passage improvement project, where we're replacing the culverts with bridges, is going to be approaching $1 million.
Okay. And that's one project?
That's one project. And then we have another project going in this summer where our coworker Lance Weiss is the project manager, and he's done a tremendous amount of work in the Little Butte Creek and Elk Creek sub-watersheds. And he's got a project going on at Elk Creek this summer. It's a more of an ecological floodplain side channel reconnection project, and that's probably approaching maybe the same price as the culvert bridge project.
Okay. Now you said you had five ecological areas. Are these just two projects within the five areas? Are there more?
Yeah. So. Again, we focus our work in these strategic areas, Evans Creek, Elk Creek, Trail Creek, Little Butte Creek, and Big Butte Creek subbasins, subwatersheds. And the project that Lance Weiss is managing is on Elk Creek. The one that I'm managing is on the West and Trail Creek watershed. We have another project going in the summer in the Trail Creek watershed where we're installing large wood. And there's going to be another fish passage barrier project and an ecological restoration project in the Little Butte Creek watershed. One of those is going to be going in this year, and one is going to be going in next year. And again, these are really strategic areas that provide the best opportunity for aquatic and terrestrial wildlife to improve in their populations.
How do you measure success?
That's a great question. We locally at the Watershed Council, we will do some what's called effectiveness monitoring. So we set up monitoring before, during, and after construction. We know that if we do certain restoration actions, we can expect a certain outcome. So when we're, say, for example, when we're installing large wood structures into a stream, we know through science and observation and monitoring that we will see an increased number of juvenile fish around those structures pretty quickly. And so that's how we kind of measure success. On a long-term scale, we'll have long-term monitoring with partner organizations, et cetera. But we do photo point monitoring, project monitoring, and effectiveness monitoring at all of our projects.
Okay, and real quickly, how's this funded?
State and federal funding, yeah.
Okay, what happens if the federal funding goes away?
Well, we'll scramble and get some different funding, but it's kind of shaking out right now that some of that's loosening up.
Excellent. Okay, that's all the time we have. Thank you both.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.